Dr. Mahbuba Musavel. She's an associate professor in the Department of Social and Behavioral Health at Virginia Commonwealth University. She's a health disparities researcher who conducts community-engaged research. For the past 2 decades, she has conducted research with low-income populations in the United States and South Africa. Her main research areas include cancer prevention, obesity prevention, and exploring the use of innovative community-engaged research methodologies. The title of her presentation is Upward Communication, Youth as Health Advocates.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. So my presentation today is going to focus on a pilot intervention that I did, which was a feasibility study to figure out whether adolescents, whether young girls, could actually provide their mothers or female elders in their lives with cancer screening information, and whether that information would then lead to a change in behaviors. And this intervention study is based on these alarming statistics that we have that indicate that despite all these great health promotion projects that we have and better programs and improved public health, we still have these disparities, especially for African Americans. And so this is, in a way, a paradigm shift in my view. We have a lot of research going on in the area of health promotion and health education that looks at how parents can influence their children's health behaviors. There's lots of studies on diet or anything you can think of, but parents are always influencing their children. So what I wanted to look at, and actually started with my work in South Africa several years ago, was can young people actually influence their parents' thinking about cancer in particular, and can that then result in a change in behaviors? But I'll skip forward to slide number 2 to say that I have no disclosures to make, and also to acknowledge the NCI, National Cancer Institute, for funding. This was funded for a career award that I received. And so the reason I became interested in this was that when I was trying to do a cervical cancer prevention project in South Africa, I realized that young people, especially in low-income families, where mothers are often the head of household, had a very unique relationship with their mother. And that because of that relationship, they talked about all sorts of things, a wide range of communication areas, including providing their mothers with financial advice, relationship advice. And I then thought, well, can they actually provide their mothers with health advice? But of course, we are more interested in the outcomes. Can it actually make a difference? So therein, kind of, that's the background of this research. And I think more importantly also, it recognized that young people, especially in low-income families, can be a real asset. They have access to education. They have whether it is low income or not, they use technology. The cell phone is tied to their hip. So they have access. They're on a beta plan. Believe me, they have some sort of access to the internet. So given all of that, I was thinking, okay, can this make a difference? So interestingly enough, in the developing world, as in Africa, Turkey, which kind of middle development, you find research is looking at this question of whether young people can be an asset. And in the U.S., we are also seeing more research, looking at this paradigm shift. And so I've done studies prior to this pilot intervention, kind of looking at, A, will mothers listen to their daughters? Because that is a change in norm. Because, you know, in terms of how the family dynamics work, parents are supposed to give their children advice, and children are not supposed to give their parents advice. So I did studies prior to this looking at that question, and overwhelmingly, mothers who tell me, oh, my daughter already gives me all kinds of advice, whether I ask her or not. And when I ask them, well, will you listen to your daughter giving you cancer advice? They said, sure, that would mean that she cares. And so I used the elaboration likelihood model, which emphasizes or highlights, rather, the credibility of the source or the messenger. Now, thinking that within this framework, the young girl would be a very credible source because her level of goodwill towards her mother or elder would be perceived as being very high because she has her mother's best interest at heart versus maybe an outsider. So, and then prior to this, this particular pilot study, the last point here was I looked at the kind of messages that would appeal to mother and daughter. So that was all I knew. And then I did this pilot study, really examining the feasibility of this whole idea. And so let me see. Maybe I'll start there, and then I'll go back to that. So the eligibility, the study was very interesting and challenging. Why? Because I looked at dyads. And the dyad had to match in eligibility. So I looked at mothers 40 and older who either were non-compliant with a mammogram, a pap smear, or a pap smear, or if they were 50 and older, they haven't had a colonoscopy. So if they were eligible in one of these areas, they didn't have a screen in one of these areas, but they also had to have a young girl, their daughter, who could participate with them. So sometimes, as you can imagine, I'd find a young girl in grades 8 to 12, which they had to be, but maybe the mother didn't match. So I expanded my sample to include female elders, relatives, who did not necessarily live in the home, because I couldn't find enough of them who actually lived in the home. So I had to expand it. And so I recruited from recreation centers, community centers, after-school program, and the adult was the primary contact for recruitment. Let me go back in case I missed something. So here was the design. These community centers where I recruited the mothers from were randomly assigned either to the control group or to the intervention group. And the way it worked was we had a baseline interview with the mother and the daughter, and if you were in the control group, if your community center or neighborhood was assigned to the control group, you had the baseline, and if you were the young girl in the study, you received a flyer. That was it. And then we followed up with you, the dyad, 3 months later. Now, I'll tell you what happened if you were in the intervention group. Let's see if I missed anything else. I just will highlight the point that the dyad, getting that dyad to match, because they both had to agree. So if I found a young girl who was eligible, and she had a relative who was also eligible, I had to get consent from the young girl's mother. I also had to obviously get consent from the dyad with whom she was in the study with, and I had to obviously get her assent. So logistically, it was quite a, I'm not going to use the word nightmare. I don't think I'm supposed to. It was difficult. It was difficult, very difficult. And, all right. So this is what the flyer looked like, and the 3 G's of cancer screening. As you heard in my introduction, I do a lot of community-based work, so my goal is really to hear from the audience that I'm trying to work with. And the 3 G's in my pilot work was suggested by one of the young girls, because they couldn't remember all the things that they had to tell their mother. So what are the 3 G's? Go early, your screen, go regularly, and then go for your follow-up. So they felt, like they said in the group, if you say 3 G's, we'll remember, but if you tell us all these things, we're not going to remember. So basically, this was the flyer that the girls in the control group received, and this was also the flyer that the girls in the intervention group received, but I'll tell you what else they received as well. All right. So tell them the same things. So the intervention workshop, this is not the session to talk about this, but I could probably have another session on just developing the intervention because it went through quite a few iterations. I'll just say very briefly, I had it planned for 2 hours because I really wanted it to be interactive and engaging. Well, as we all know, to be interactive takes a lot of time, and it did not work. So I'll say in and out the door, including pre-test, post-test, role-play, videos, it was 60 minutes or less. That's how quickly, because we realized in the pilot testing, disaster. Because we had an issue with health literacy, attention span, did not work. It had to be the fewer messages you could tell them, the better. But just, so I think one of the things that are highlighted here are the my plan, which the thinking was according to the theory of reason, planned behavior was, and I do, you know, in my other work that I've done, I realize you can tell somebody something, but if they don't write it down and make a plan for how they will do it, it's less likely to get done. So we had the girls role play the message. We had them role play what their mother's response may be, what the challenges may be, and then we also had them plan when they will tell this message. Now, the reason why this was important was because now half of the group was enrolled in the study with a relative. And that meant they didn't see the person every day like the they would see their mother. So this became even more important. And I think, as you'll see later in my conclusions, it was also a challenge of the study, and maybe we'll have to think about it somewhat differently. Let's see. Oh, and then we also asked them to text the project coordinator as soon as they gave their mother or female relative the message. Because we wanted them to kind of felt that they were accountable to somebody and then report the message. So here are some of the results. Now again, I want to emphasize this is preliminary analysis and this was a feasibility study. So does this idea even work was essentially the question for this feasibility study. So as you can see, we had mother-daughter dyads. 55% were mother-daughter, the others were relatives, and the breakdown was granddaughter, niece, goddaughter, and 64% lived in the same house. And I think for this type of intervention, that is probably something to think about, whether they live in the same house or not, right? And here are some of the demographics. They were obviously all 40 and older. The adolescent age was 12 to 18. Let's see what else is important. Adult employment, 50% of them were unemployed in the intervention group or seeking employment, and 82% of them had some form of health coverage. Now remember, most of these, they to be in the study, they either had to be uninsured or underinsured. So that number that you see there, 82% of them had some health insurance, they felt mostly it didn't give them the level of insurance that they wanted. They were on this program, Virginia Coordinated Care, which we provide for people who have low income. So they were on different kinds of programs. They had health insurance, but they didn't feel like it was up to par. And then 36% of them said they were unable or they had difficulty to get medical care. So I think this is of interest. Perhaps, does your daughter have any influence on your health decisions? 45% in the intervention group said that they do, and 57% of the control adults said that they have. I think about that in terms of health promotion and health education within the family. I think I'm going to say it again. This is not generalizable. This was a small study, a feasibility study. So I can't say this is going to, but I'm saying for this group, this is quite important for us as health educators, researchers, to start thinking about that. If mothers or adults are saying, my child can influence my health decisions, I think that has implications for the way we develop and the types of programs we develop. And then how open would you be to receiving health advice from your daughter? Now, I've done several of these studies in different groups, and time again, the percentages are this high, that most of them say, I am open, I am listening. Because I'll tell you why I'm emphasizing this. When I wrote a grant to do this years ago from an RO3, the first group of reviewers said, this will never work. This is outrageous. We've never heard that young people are able to give their parents advice. This just flies against, you know, what we believe, the convention. And so, you know, So I'm always emphasizing that, because they really are open to it. Whether they listen to it is something else, but the fact that they're open to it, like my, I don't think I have time for stories, but my daughter came home the other day, her entire middle school is reading a book on a kid who has leukemia and cancer and all of that, and she just started chatting. One day to me, "Mom, did you have your mammogram? It is very important. You need to go to the doctor. I know you do cancer work." But she just went on and on, and I was saying, "Ooh, there's my mother-daughter study in action." Because she was, I don't know if her teacher actually told her to tell her parents, but she came home and she was very concerned about my preventive behavior. I think that probably happens in a lot of families where your child tells you about your diet. If you have diabetes, your child tells you, you know, checks what you eat. I think what we need to do is figure out a way, how can we get that to a behavior? I think that's the challenge. Oh, 5 minutes. 5 minutes? Okay. So now I'm completely off my game. So let's see. So let's look at the appeal. Let's look at the appeal. So the girl went home and her task was to tell her mother, oh, I didn't tell you this, in the workshop, she got an envelope that was sealed, and she was informed in that sealed envelope which screening her mother or relative lacked. And we obviously got permission from the relative to share that at the baseline. So they could see, oh, my mother didn't have a mammogram for 2 years or 3 years. So they knew, the message they took home was personalized. So let's look at this information, because I think for what it's worth, it says something. In the daughter shared a cancer screening appeal. So did the daughter go home and tell her mother or relative that? In 82%, they did. The mother said, yes, my daughter came home and she told me about this information that she learned. And the daughter, 87% of them said, and you can see there's a high congruence between what the mother said and what the daughter said in the intervention group. Then, did the daughter specifically ask you to get screened? Because that's something different. Your child can come home and tell you about what they learn, but did they convert that into a request, into an appeal? Because that's closer to the actual behavior, right? So 100% of the mothers say, yes, she did. She actually asked me. Now, I think what's interesting, if we look at the control group as well, they were not asked specifically to tell, they were not asked, they were just given the pamphlet, right? But we can see that they also went home, and 6 out of the 14 actually asked the mother to get screened. But I'm so sorry. I will have to rush, which I don't like. But, some information of those kids who did not share the appeal, why did they not do that? This girl still felt it was too much for her to explain. Another one let the time pass. She said too much time passed, and then she forgot to give the message and felt it was too late now to say anything about it. I think this is what we're interested in here. So 7 of the 12, and the reason why this 12 is the number is because those received the cancer message for breast cancer. Remember, they didn't all need a breast cancer screening. They didn't all need, so only 12 of them needed a breast cancer screening, and 58% of them tried to make an appointment to get screened. And then of those who made an appointment, 100%, 5 out of the 5 who actually made an appointment got screened. So remember, we started with 22, and then 18, I'm talking about the intervention group, 18 received the message, and they were asked. And so these are the numbers we end up with. Now, about colon cancer, we did not ask the daughters to ask their mothers to get screened for colon cancer. We asked them to tell their mothers to talk to their provider. The reason being was that we felt for colon cancer, the recommendations would differ per the woman in her situation, and that would be a doctor-patient communication that needed to happen. I think I have to skip. So here's the one thing I want to say, though. When we started this initially, we were going to check medical records. Oh, because obviously that is the gold standard, right? This is self-reported. So we were going to check medical records only if they received care from one of the clinics that I was affiliated with. But only one woman received care from that clinic, and so we didn't have permission to check the other records of the other people. So I think that's a major shortcoming of this data, because it's still self-reported, and it obviously would have been much better if it was checked with medical records. I am going to stop out of respect for my colleague who's going to present next, but I'm happy to discuss this later.